Welcome to the RetroPixel Podcast, where I fill the best part of your day with a healthy dose of vitamin J. I am your host, James, and let's get right on into it with a breakdown of this episode's topics. I am going to cover James Gunn rehired for Guardians 3, wireless display on Xbox One, Anthem shutting down and bricking PS4s, Xbox One All Digital Edition, Electronic Arts also skipping E3 2019, a massive security flaw on the Samsung Galaxy S10, what my wife and I watched over the past couple of weeks, and a delightful story to cap this all off for the children of Brenda's Beaver. However, before all of that, let's jump right on into this episode's sponsor right now.
Hey, James, how's it going there?
Hey, what's going on? Friggin' Haji here. What's going on, buddy?
Not too much. I'm just getting a lot of preparation, a lot of stuff in the works here. Very, very busy.
Well, I imagine we are literally, a week away? Actually, exactly. From the big show.
Yeah, 1 week away. Things are rolling. Things are hopping. Got to go visit the venue yesterday just to kind of give it a once-over because it's a brand new location. And we just wanted to cover all our bases to make sure that we didn't miss anything. And you know what? I think the fact that we had to change is going to be for the good because this venue is outstanding.
Oh, perfect. That was actually going to be one of the things that I wanted to highlight. So let's just jump right on into that. All the original posters and media, that had to be changed basically almost overnight on your end. So yeah, we're going to be hitting a new venue, like you said. I've never seen it. I'm sure majority of the people that drive out for the show probably aren't aware of it. So I want to try and emphasize as much as possible for people to go to the right spot.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. We don't want anybody showing up at the wrong location. So unfortunately, due to stuff beyond our control, we had to switch locations. So we're going to be now at the Holly Community Center, which is at 171 Mapleton Ave in Barrie. I blame Bill from STC Pod on this because I think he pulled some strings because it's literally like right behind his house. But you know what? I think in the end, this is for the greater good. I went to this location and it's an ice rink. So it's still the same size of surface we have, but the parking just seems to be more ample parking that's there. It's just more to-date location as well. Like when you go inside, you'll see what I mean when you get there. We always do the barbecue, so the barbecue is going to be nice and close this time. It's literally right outside the door. You don't have to walk very far to get to it, and lots of room for people to mingle and do their thing.
Oh, perfect. And I guess the usual staples are going to be there in terms of familiar faces, tables. I'm sure you got some of the same vendors, probably a couple of new faces. But I'll let you do your showish rundown of what people can expect to see there in terms of the goods.
Yeah, for sure. So it's 140 plus tables. We have video games and accessories. We have board games, vintage toys, pop figures, geek art. This year we have Sir Games a Lot, who owns a store in Barrie. He's going to run a board game area and tabletop gaming area for us. So if there's a certain board game that you want to try out, he probably will have it. If it's not even open, he said he'll open it, no problem, if somebody wants to demo it. We have Barrie Race Club there, who do mini RC cars. So there's going to be a track set up if you want to play some mini RC cars, that's there. We have some custom arcade machines that are going to be there that you can test out. And if it's something you really like, the guy can take orders on that. We have EB Games on site. This is huge for us. They've donated a $300 EB Games gift card that we're going to be giving away. And they're going to have Xbox One and Nintendo Switch demos set up as well for people to play there.
Yeah, that's wild. That's actually probably one of the biggest names that you've had so far join it.
Yeah, definitely. They are huge. Sorry, it's just going to get noisy here for a sec. We may take a second here.
Yeah, that's life, buddy.
Yeah. You guys got to give me like 10 minutes, okay? I'm just on a call. Okay, so just a sec here. We'll wait for the garage to finish. So, yeah, EB Games, like, definitely the biggest size and company that we've ever had. We have a lot of great companies that come and stores and things like that, but they are the biggest. It's been huge for us for marketing to try to reach out to people that don't know about our shows, the moms and the kids and the fathers and stuff like that, that go into EB Games. And we have our posters in about, I think it was 8 to 10 locations of EB Games all across Central Ontario and down into Toronto. So hopefully with that support and their support, we can grow this event. And maybe there's a potential to become a 2-day event down the road.
Oh, for sure. That'd be awesome. Like, I personally, I've attended, I think, all of them except one, because I had a wedding that weekend. So that was unfortunate. But, you know, barring that, I pretty much always can fit it in my schedule. So that's always a great thing. And I've always walked away with something pretty cool that otherwise I wouldn't buy, because you got to pay for shipping online. You can't see it in person. You don't want to have the struggle and hassle of trying to return it and fight for your money back. Like I said, I've gotten some really great grabs and way below, quote, collector market cost. So there's definitely some really great stuff to be found, specifically your show, like that I would never have gotten anywhere else. And they would definitely not be on my shelf because, like I said, I'm not going to pay $20, $30 shipping, which I know is ridiculously marked up, whereas I can just go there and buy it from a guy at a table and still have the fun of haggling for an even better price on top. So that's always a huge part of the appeal as well.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Us up in Canada, it's really difficult to find certain things. Or like you said, you have to buy it online, and shipping to Canada is just a disaster. It's so expensive. So the fact that we created this event to bring all of these like-minded individuals together, it's awesome, because I guarantee no matter what, if you come into the event, you are going to find something, whether it's a game, some artwork, whether it's a board game, whether, I know in your case, you've found arcade stuff before, like you will find something.
Yeah, no, I would say nearly half of the Neo Geo cards that I have for the MVS probably came from your show, literally, over the past number of years, at least half of them. And I would have never otherwise gotten my hands on them any other way.
Yeah, and another aspect of, you said, it's just the camaraderie of coming together, seeing the people that you see at every event, hanging out, Cartridge Club crew, just the regular vendors that are there, just the regular people you happen to run into, just to be able to hang out and chat and talk and BS around. It's just part of the experience.
No, for sure. And then I guess I'll point out as well, you are family friendly in terms of cameras. You would like as much exposure as possible from literally anybody that wants to do a vloggy style thing. As far as I know, this is a different venue, but I would imagine that it's because it's your show that you sort of dictate those rules. And I'm going to imagine that you probably have that same welcoming hand going forward with this one as well.
Yes, most definitely. If you want to come, if you want to film footage, whether you're a YouTuber or a vlogger or whatever, feel free to take pictures, post them on Instagram, post them on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, whatever you want. Get the word out there. Let people know about this event. We have a pretty big following, but we want to make it that much bigger and that much better. And definitely, it's encouraged.
No, for sure. And I'll be sure to put your the Twitter details in the description so that people can tag you directly, and then you can like retweet it out as well.
Perfect. That would be awesome. Yeah. We're on Twitter, we're on Instagram, we're on Facebook. Those are kind of the three big. And then our website, www.barrygameexchange.ca. You can see everything there. We have what you can do at the event. We have an FAQ. We have the event location, as well as all of the confirmed vendors. If they have a form of website or social media, we have them posted on our website. So if you want to kind of get a preview of what's going to happen, you can check those out there. And I'm also always posting stuff on Facebook.
All right, perfect. Yeah. And I really appreciate your time for the, you know, couple of minutes that I had you here. I myself am going to be live streaming, assuming that I have the data capabilities. My phone has the data plan, but sometimes the building, it's hit or miss. So that day specifically, if the data is working properly through the arena, then I will be live streaming as well, so people can say hello if you're not able to actually attend.
That'll be awesome. Yeah, and then just a reminder as well, if you want to get in early, starting at 11 o'clock, it's $10 admission at the door. And then regular admission starts at noon, and that's $5 at the door. Kids 10 and under are free. As well, with all paid admission, that's entrance into the chance to win the $300 EB Games gift card. And let's see everybody there. Let's make this the biggest and best event yet.
No, absolutely. And that is on April 7th.
April 7th.
All righty, perfect. I really appreciate your time today, bud. And hopefully this next one is just as successful as the previous ones.
Thanks, James.
All right, have a good one.
You too.
All right, let's jump right on into it with James Gunn being rehired for Guardians of the Galaxy 3. And I must say this is fan-freaking-tastic news. And it's surprising coming from me that I actually care about this because, honestly, I'm pretty much 100% exhausted on these superhero-type flicks. There has been way too many of them, in my opinion, over the past, handful of years. And I just genuinely don't care anymore. The wife and I, we still watch them. We don't have any major excitement towards them. We don't set aside specific time to, release day, we gotta sit through this. Literally at our own convenience, if there's nothing else of interest to watch, then we'll basically fill it with some of the superhero flicks that's in the backlog. However, with saying that, the Guardians franchise has been something that has actually really impressed us. We watched the first one with zero expectations, because we knew nothing about the characters. Literally nothing. And we really enjoyed it. A lot more so than we had thought that we would. And, we actually revisited it once. Which, for us to rewatch something is genuinely pretty rare in terms of a film. And then the sequel came out, and we really enjoyed the heck out of that, too. It was easily, for us, on par with the first one. We really enjoyed both of them. And this is coming from a couple that does not have a heavy background or interest in sci-fi, superhero, any of that stuff. We really don't. There's very little that we watch that's in that genre that I would say that we were fans of. For myself growing up, the Terminator 1 and 2, those were obviously, childhood favorites. The original Ninja Turtles 1 and 2, don't even get me started on 3. Batman, that kind of thing. There's been some history of these kind of flicks in my childhood and in the wife's childhood. But we never really grew into them in our adulthood where we loved them. It just wasn't our thing. New Star Wars flicks come out. Yeah, we watch them too. But again, it's just meh. It's a filler that, we have an empty Saturday night. Let's sit through the latest superhero, sci-fi, whatever big budget film that there is. And we'll generally sit through it. That's not to say we don't enjoy them, but we just don't go gaga over them. But the Guardians franchise, we really enjoyed that heck of a lot more than we thought that we would. And it was quite disappointing when James Gunn was let go for the Guardians 3. Now granted, this to the best of my knowledge, it wasn't even in pre-production or whatever. But it was basically, I think it came down to a controversy of him having a rude or off-color tweet many, many years ago. This wasn't something new, this was many years ago. And somehow it had been dug up and he was let go for that, and people were obviously quite upset about it. I believe the cast as well for the flick was pretty upset about it. They put in their words about it to the studio, and I'm sure that there was, those online signature petitions, that kind of thing, and they rarely ever work. Now, granted, I don't think this was a petition thing. I think this was more so them looking at the history of this movie, the first two, can someone really replace this guy and have the same appeal? They probably thought, you know what, we overstepped our bounds on this for a simple tweet that was many years ago that he publicly apologized for. So they brought him back, and that was really, really great news. He is working on a current project now, I believe the sequel to Suicide Squad. So he's finishing up that first, and then it's going to be Guardians of the Galaxy 3. Yeah, I rarely do I get excited for this kind of news. And when that had actually appeared, I believe it was a handful of weeks ago, within the past month, I thought to myself right away, I was like, oh, I actually have a reason to be excited for this film now. Because initially I was like, well, who's going to replace him and how can we imagine that it's going to be on the same level? It's nice to know that we're going to get the same director and the same feel as the original two films coming back around for the third. And frankly, I'm really happy about that. This is personal preference, obviously, but like I said, for people like my wife and myself, generally don't care for this kind of flick. It means that actually shows how much that we actually were really excited. Like, wow, this guy's coming back to do it. This is going to be great. We don't actually have to think to ourselves, maybe we'll skip this one sort of thing. We're definitely going to be checking it out for sure now. All right, next up we have wireless display for Xbox One. This will be a little bit of a ramble, but bear with me on this one, because there's quite a bit to cover on this. In my late teen years, we sort of started to experiment with remote desktop, and that was cool. That actually blew my mind back when I was younger. I was like, wow, this is great. This is basically remote desktop, for those of you that are familiar with that concept, for the Xbox One from your PC. Now, why would we want this? There's a couple of reasons. I can definitely see the appeal if you have a laptop and you want to display that on your larger screen without having to connect it through an HDMI, that kind of thing. Some laptops actually don't even come with HDMI anymore. This is obviously more of a Mac thing than it is a PC that I'm aware of. But I wouldn't be surprised with how some of these PC manufacturers are designing laptops as thin as humanly possible, that you'd be losing those traditional HDMI ports, where you might have to get a specific dongle that goes from a mini HDMI to a regular HDMI, that kind of thing. Sometimes you're not always carrying one, maybe you don't even own one in the house. So that is a huge bonus if you have a netbook, a notebook, whatever, that you want to display instead of, you know, it's 13 to 15 inch screen and you put it on your 50 plus inch screen. That is a reason for this, for sure, 100%. Another reason for this would be simply because you have a desktop upstairs in your house and you want to play games downstairs in your house on a different screen. That is also a massive appeal. Now, from this, you might be thinking to yourself, well, how do I really control this? It's kind, I want to say it's kind of like a Steam Link, and it's not. It's the same idea as a Steam Link. Let me get into that. There is a way of playing your Steam games streaming from your PC to your Xbox One with this application. Now, with that, there is a caveat. You cannot do mouse and keyboard. So any Steam games that are currently heavily or reliant on keyboard and mouse setup, you cannot do that. Now, any Steam games that are controller-based or support a controller option, apparently this will work for you. So it's basically a rudimentary Steam Link with a bit of extra BS thrown in with it. Like I said, you can stream your desktop, but without the use of a keyboard, and it's kind of stupid. It's not like you can open up your Word documents and start typing on them downstairs on your other screen. Because apparently, as of now, granted, they very well may change that and add support, there is no keyboard support where you could just jack a keyboard into your Xbox One and use it. Through this application, the mirror, or what I call it, the wireless display application, that is not available as of now. Now, how do you interact with your PC without a mouse? Your actual controller acts as the mouse. There's a way of hitting the two buttons, what do you call it, the menu and screen cap or screen share, I forget what they're called, on the two that are underneath the Xbox logo. Clicking those goes from mouse mode to controller mode, and that's how you would obviously go. You load up a Steam game that supports a controller mode, you can use your controller that way, play your Steam games downstairs on your big screen, exit out of the application, and then go straight back to your Xbox dashboard. That's cool, but it's so lacking. It's great that they're working on this, but it is in such an infant state that it is just so incomplete that I kind of wish it didn't exist. For people that wanted to say, you know, the developers or testers, that kind of thing, there's people that do the beta testing on different versions of Xbox software. That would have made more sense than making this public right now. There is quite a bit of setup involved with this. clicking this, clicking that. You got to open up the app downstairs, open up the app on your PC. It's an awful lot of effort for very limited control-wise base that you can do with interactions with your PC. That's a problem. If I could jack in a keyboard and a mouse to my Xbox and control my PC like a remote desktop, bam, that would be fantastic. Then I would say, you know what, this is worth screwing around with. As of right now, for me, no. There is absolutely no reason for me to even try this. I looked up videos of people doing this. I read about it. That was as far as I need to go with this. I do not need to do this myself, as of now, until they change that. Past that, there's also apparently, now granted, I hope that they fix this too, because this is ridiculous. They call it the wireless display, and they truly mean wireless display. If you are using a hardwired connection, aka Ethernet port, apparently, now granted I'm using quotes, apparently, because I haven't done it myself, a wired connection does not work. Now that's fine if you're doing it from a laptop, but if you're doing it from a desktop, that's insane. Absolutely insane. Guess what? My desktops, all of them, every single desktop piece of hardware that I own is connected through Ethernet. They might have wireless built in, and I don't care. Those adapters don't get used. I'm an Ethernet guy. I've always been a direct connect guy. Even with my laptops, guess what? Even my friggin' Macs that I buy that don't have an Ethernet port on them, I have the additional dongle that I can plug in so I can actually use the Ethernet port when I have a desk. That's how much I'm into it. I will actually spend money and buy the dongle for wired connections. But yeah, the fact that you can't use wired connections is ridiculous because you're obviously going to have much better connection rate. They're doing it through wireless. I mean, like I said, they literally called this wireless display because apparently you cannot use a wired connection, which is beyond insane. You want to call it wireless display? Fine. You want to allow people to use Ethernet connections in the future and call it second display, or hell, just keep it called wireless display. I don't care. Give support for freaking Ethernet connections, please. Without that, even with keyboard and mouse support, I still would not touch this if I cannot use a hardware connection. That is fact. That is pure preference for me, 100%. But I think it's ridiculous that that is not supported. Alrighty, next off, I am going to pop this into Anthem. Apparently, shutting down and bricking PS4 consoles. Now, to the best of my knowledge, this is purely contained to the PlayStation hardware. I haven't heard of it being a problem on anything else. Granted, I know virtually nothing about this game. I have not played it. I have not looked up much of any footage of it. I just know that it is a fairly big AAA release, and I might even be mistaken about that. However, what I do know is that apparently there is quite a bit of issues with this on the PlayStation hardware. I think this is pretty much widespread between all types of PlayStations out there, whether or not you have the OG PS4, the Slim, the Pro. To the best of my knowledge, it is affecting pretty much any of those. Now, from that, what do I mean? More so, it is basically just the game being yourself being booted out of it, crashing, whatnot, quite heavily. Now, granted, this was a couple of weeks ago. Have they tailored this over the past couple of weeks? Quite possible. Quite possible. I'm going by the story that I was following when this was basically more relevant than this recording, but I'll get into why I'm still covering it at the end. And a very small, and I do mean extremely small portion, are apparently being completely bricked, as in the consoles do not work anymore. They're just done. But still, why is this a problem? Even if this is, let's say for argument's sake that this is 0.01% of the install base that's being affected. That is still more than acceptable. A game should not be having this problem, that's for sure. There's plenty of testing that developers do ahead of time, player testing, they send it out for reviewers, that kind of thing. it's pretty rare that you come across something that's bad enough, even though it's, like I said, very, very segregated to a small portion of the PlayStation install base. One is still bad enough. At least one console having this issue that is purely caused directly from just the game software, and that's it. That's still an issue, but this is apparently enough that numerous people were having this problem, that it was enough of a thread that got enough steam to sort of gain widespread notice. And that's an issue. Big time. Can you imagine going out and spending your hard-earned money on a game that has severe issues where it's crashing repeatedly, constantly, that you cannot even play it? We are in an era where returning a game is virtually impossible. Not always impossible, but for the most part, you buy a game, it is yours, and provided you bought a physical copy, at least you can ditch it that way. You bought it digitally, there's very little you can do with that, especially once you've gone past the quote-unquote grace time. Sometimes, you know, I think it's Steam will give you, what, I think an hour or two that you can play the game before they consider it yours, you can still return it. I don't think Sony offers anything like that. I think once you've loaded it, it's yours. I might even be wrong with that. I think with Sony, as soon as you've downloaded it, it's yours, even if you haven't even loaded the game. However, this was apparently an exception. Digital refunds were being offered by request. Granted, people had to put some pressure on, but apparently those were being honored. And even with physical sales, well, I'm going to assume you're probably screwed when you bought it. But like I said, very well, this could have been solved by now. I haven't heard much of it in the tech industry news, so maybe this is just washed under the bridge. Those issues have been fixed. But it's still something that should not, even though, like I said, this was a small segregated issue, it was large enough that multiple people were having that issue and made it out to be a news story. And that's a scary thought. You could go out and buy a Nintendo Switch game, you could go out and buy a PlayStation game, whatever. And if it, just the software not working is bad enough, if you can get a refund on it, great. But like I said, for the most part, we are in an era where getting a refund for a copy of a game generally is not available for the most part. I would say very little to the point that you're not getting a refund. They do exist in some circumstances, but they generally, once you've bought the game, you've loaded it, you've tried to play it a handful of times, that is yours, with the exception of a physical copy that you can ditch it. But still, that's pretty darn scary on its own, let alone hardware being completely freaking bricked to the point that they do not boot up anymore. You cannot factory reset them. That's even more scary. You imagine grabbing like a PS4 Pro. Those things are not cheap. Those things are obviously the most relevant piece of PlayStation hardware on the market right now. Getting one of those bricked and it's out of warranty, man, that would be brutal. And you got to prove that it was that game that bricked it. If you're out of warranty, good friggin' luck with that. I'm going to be 100% honest with you. Good freaking luck with that. You'd be hard-pressed to really prove that. You might be boned on that one. But the fact that this is even happening or has happened, like I said, might have been fixed by now. This is purely on what I read a number of weeks ago, within the past month. It's still pretty deplorable that this was a thing. And hopefully there's going to be something put in place in the future. As rare as this is, there needs to be something in the future where if something comes out that's widespread enough that multiple users are having this issue with a release, that it's like, okay, you know what? This does not typically fall under our terms of service for a refund. There needs to be something put in place where if there is like a detrimental issue with a software release that can't be patched immediately, that players can get their money back. Whether or not they buy it again in the future because it's been fixed, that's completely up to them, obviously. But there needs to be something that protects customers in terms of very rare instances like this, because it's still 60 to 90 to whatever friggin' amount of money that you might have bought for, what is it, the season pass, DLC, all that kind of garbage thrown on top. Games are not cheap, and there needs to be some sort of protection for players that get screwed on. Like I said, very rare instances like this, but there needs to be something put in place to protect players when something like this happens. Alrighty, I'm going to bounce this on into the Xbox One All Digital Edition. I very well might have covered this in the past, but it would have been briefly. I'm going to sort of get into this a little bit more because we have more information. Apparently, this console will be bundled with a 1TB hard drive to start. Good job, Microsoft. Good friggin' job. Because honestly, I was a little bit worried in the back of my head when I heard about this thing that they would like launch this with a 500GB hard drive, which is quite honestly useless. Do I think a terabyte is enough? Honestly, no, especially for a console that is all digital. But in hindsight, any of the consoles that you buy nowadays where you buy a disc and throw it in, it basically installs majority, if not all, of the game on the hard drive anyways, to the best of my knowledge. So yeah, I guess there's not really much of a difference in terms of that. I would have liked to have seen a slightly higher price tag on this and a 2TB drive. That's just me. I own a 2TB Xbox One S. That is the reason why I paid a premium for it. Not only was it a great Gears of War bundle, it looks nice. 100%. It was that 2TB drive that made me go, ooh. Now, can you use external storage? Yes, of course you can. I personally don't like having a bunch of extra pieces attached to my consoles. Kind of feels like life support that should already be inside the console, in my opinion. But you know what? For the most part, a terabyte is all right. Assuming you have fairly good bandwidth and unlimited internet, that should not be a problem for majority of people that just want to play a game, they get tired of it, they delete it, and if they want it 6 months again from now, whatever. Now, as it should be no surprise, this thing is supposed to be looking identical to the Xbox One S, with the exception of obviously no disc tray and no eject button for the disc tray. I've seen, let's call them mock-ups online of what it's supposed to maybe look like. I don't think we have an official image from Microsoft yet. I could be mistaken. Some people are depicting this being exactly the same shell and literally just where the disc tray is that still exists. It's just a hard piece of plastic so that you can't obviously put anything in. Or that little space is going to be completely removed and it'd be just a pure flat flush front of the console. Personally, I think that's what we are going to get more so than a mock disc tray just being covered up with a piece of plastic. It makes more sense that it would just be one flat uniform front on the console that doesn't even show that a disc tray was removed. That makes more sense to me. We'll see what we get. But that's what I think we are going to see. We are not going to get one that has that little split on the left-hand side in the middle. I totally think it's going to be a flat flush piece of plastic, 100%. Prove me wrong, Microsoft. Prove me wrong, people. We'll see. It's supposed to be coming bundled with a couple of games. That does not surprise me at all. Now, by bundled, obviously, I mean digital. That should be no one's surprise. Obviously, pulling up here. It's stating here the possibility of Forza. It does not say which one. I would assume it'd be the latest Forza, which I top of my head 5, I'm guessing, whatever the latest in the franchise is. Horizon 3, see if, oh yeah, Forza Horizon 3, wow, okay, duh, I'm lost, I don't follow racing games, sorry, that was a, let me start again. Forza Horizon 3, Sea of Thieves, and Microsoft, or, wow, bleh. Minecraft digital codes bundled in the box, oh my goodness, babble. I haven't got my whole coffee in me yet. I'm doing this in the morning. Okay, let's try this one more time. Forza Horizon 3... wow. Okay. Forza Horizon 3, Sea of Thieves, and Minecraft digital codes bundled into the box. Wow. I'm not even going to edit that out because that was so horrible. I hope you laughed at me. And they're saying that right now, it doesn't look like there's going to be a bundled subscription with the Xbox Game Pass. I'm going to call BS on that too. That would be a 100% loss of interest in Microsoft. They're putting out a digital-only console. They're giving you a couple of digital game bundles in there with the DLC codes or digital codes, whatever you want to call them, the download codes. There you go. There's going to be some sort of premium free access to the subscription service. I'm calling that now. That would be such a lost opportunity if they didn't, considering what this console is geared towards. It's not going to be a year, but it's going to be at least a month, 3 months, 6 months, something. Something will be included as well. Whether or not it's advertised on the outside of the box or not, I guarantee at least a month. Granted, I think that would be kind of lame. At least a month, more than likely 3 or 6 months included with the Microsoft Game Pass subscription service will be in that box as well. It would be pointless for them to not give that to the consumer, considering what this console is targeted for. Calling it now, if I am wrong, I will be... I'm not even furious. I would just be dumbfounded that wouldn't be a part of it, considering that this is a digital-only console for Microsoft, and it would not have that Game Pass subscription service of somehow included in there to give people a taste so that they want to buy it and subscribe in the future. Hell no, come on. We know that's going to happen somewhere. It might not be on the outside of the box advertised. It's going to be somewhere in the packaging, though. Guarantee it. Alrighty, let's pop this right on into Electronic Arts is also going to be ditching E3 2019. This is getting to be writing on the wall for sure. I already discussed this, I believe, back in December-ish, that Sony was pulling out. That's one of the big three. And that was like a sign that E3 is not irrelevant, but has its days numbered over the next handful of years. But now they're losing some of these big player publishers as well. Now, EA does not produce hardware, obviously, but they are a massive studio. Have your opinions about them. I'm sure we all do. They've been pretty much unanimously hated at some point, one time or another, for people because of their practices and their ways of doing games that are just heavily predatory on loot boxes, that kind of thing. But it cannot be ignored that they are still a massive player, massive, in the game industry. And the fact that they are as well ditching E3, that's two major companies ditching E3 in less than a year before the next show. I'm sorry, E3's days are numbered. Like I said before, when I did this in December, it is not going to disappear overnight. That is not going to be the case. But they lost Sony. They've lost They've lost EA. Its days are numbered. They lose any other of the big, big names out there. Like, let's say they lose Nintendo. Nintendo's already doing their own thing with their streams of, you know, I forget what they call those, Treehouse Directs or whatever. They lose them at E3. They lose Microsoft at E3. I'm sorry, E3 is virtually dead at that point. It will be a handful of indie developers and some of the other big AAA studios that still show up to it for a couple of years, and then it will be ideally finished. It may still exist for a handful of years afterwards, but it would not be E3, the big mecca that it is. It'll be E3 Showcase, where it'll be a much smaller venue, a much smaller handful of people actually displaying things, obviously. E3 is unfortunately going to be numbered. Like I said, it could last 2 years, it could last another 10 years in a very smaller form factor or smaller general over whatever. I'm tongue-twisted at this point. It could still exist for another 10 years until the gaming industry bubble has gotten to a point where it's just not relevant. Who knows? But E3 is not what it used to be. That is for sure. They've lost two major, major names in the gaming industry in mere months. I'm sorry, but online has killed the need for an in-person market show like this. It really has. It hasn't killed it where people need to visit these things in person to see things for people that do press coverage, that kind of thing. But it's not going to be the E3 that you're used to. It's going to be, okay, we have a major convention for Sony, and then they fly out and visit Sony for just a couple of Sony days. Or they have another one for just EA. Okay, here's an EA day. We're going to showcase all of our great games coming up over the next 6 to 12 months. You can try the demos, whatever. That's what we're going to be seeing in the future. It's going to be separate shows, not the big mechas anymore. It is going to dwindle. It's unfortunate, but as much as you might not like it, do or do not like that, that is a fact. These major shows where it's going to be all these big players all in one venue, those days are done. They are done. They're done already. Like I said, we've already lost two major names. It is going to be separate individual conventions and separate individual venues spread across the U.S. and whatever major parts of the globe that have these development studios and hardware manufacturers. That is the future of gaming in terms of the news industry. That is where it is going to be. Alrighty, pop this on over to the Samsung Galaxy S10. Major security flaw, and I mean monumental. When I saw this, I was blown away how bad that this could be for people. Let me get right on into it. I saw this on the Unbox Therapy YouTube channel, and he's got, 10 million or so subscribers? I would have to say that fairly reliable source to be viewing. And he showed this directly multiple times. I'm actually going to put the link to that video in this podcast description. I encourage you, whether or not you're an Android user or not, check this out, because this is some scary stuff. Basically, the Galaxy S10 has a form of Face ID. I know Face ID, I think, is what Apple calls theirs. There might be a different name for the Galaxy version, but I'm going to call it Face ID Unlock, where basically you just hold the phone up to your face and it unlocks it because it recognizes your facial features and whatnot. Scary, scary stuff, because apparently one of the guys that works in Lou's studio said, oh, I can unlock this phone without it even looking at you. And he basically called him out saying, oh yeah, BS, you gotta show me this. All he did was pull up a YouTube video, an older Unbox Therapy YouTube video, put it in full screen, took the phone, held it up to the screen, and it unlocked the phone. That's a friggin' problem. Computer screens are pretty nice. They give you a really good image, but still, you got to think that there's got to be some way that it, you know, the screen has a different texture to it, whether it be the matte finish, the glossy finish, whatever, that would inhibit this phone from doing it. No. Scary stuff. And I thought, you're basically thinking, oh, well, maybe this is a fluke once. No, he just pulls up a random YouTube video from his own past library and does it 3-4 times in a row, and it doesn't even take him multiple attempts. He just grabs the phone, holds it up to the screen, and in less than a second, boom, phone's unlocked. He locks the phone, holds it up to the screen again, boom, unlocked. He does it numerous times. You got to think how much of a problem that is. Now you might be thinking to yourself, well, I'm not a big YouTuber, blah blah blah. Think about the potential privacy issues of this though. You have your phone in your office, you leave it on your desk, whatever. Someone else can grab your phone, pull up your Facebook page, pull up a picture of you, and unlock your phone and go through your phone. Now are you listening to me? That is hugely, hugely, just massively security flaw. Just monumental thinking about it. There's no way I would possibly trust this technology at this point right now. Like I said, you don't have to be a massive YouTuber and think to yourself, oh, I just lose my phone. Someone's not going to know who I am. So and so, I don't have anything to worry about. No, this could be literally done in your office, in your home, whatever. Like I said, you leave your phone out, even at your own home, and you have a neighbor drop by, you go to the bathroom, they want to go through your phone, they could just pick up your phone, find a picture frame in your house, hold it up to that picture frame, unlock your phone. Now are you seeing how much of a friggin' problem that is? First of all, you're thinking to yourself, well, I'm not a 10 million subscriber YouTuber, I don't have to worry about that. No, if you're able to do it on a computer screen, guess what? You're able to do it through a Facebook profile. You're able to do it off of a picture frame. That is scary. At least with, the iPhone 7 here that I'm using. I got the finger ID where you put your thumb or whatever on it. That's a lot harder to replicate. It's not impossible, but it's a lot more difficult to replicate within a matter of seconds of me just going away, grabbing a snack from the kitchen, whatever. You're going to have to put a bit of thought. You're going to have to get my fingerprint, try to replicate that somehow on a transparent piece of plastic and put it over my screen. No. This is literally grabbing the phone, pulling up a Facebook profile, pulling up a YouTube page. Like I said, even if it's working on those, there's no reason why it shouldn't work on just a graduation photo that's hanging up in your home. Good gravy, that drove me nuts. And I will not be Face ID, that is not a thing for me right now. That is just 100% pure insanity that it was that easy to circumvent and bypass. Like I said, I will link that video in the podcast description. I really, really encourage you to check it out. Whether or not you like Unbox Therapy's videos or not, that's not the point. This is to see how unbelievably unsecure that this feature is. Alrighty, I'm going to move this on into what we watched over the past couple of weeks or the past month, whatever I normally call this segment. Honestly, pulling a brain fart, just work with it. I'm going to go on into The Green Book. Dr. Don Shirley is a world-class African-American pianist, or pianist, plays piano, let's put it that way, who is about to embark on a concert tour in the Deep South during the time period of 1962. In need of a driver and protection, Shirley recruits Tony Lip, a tough-talking bouncer from an Italian-American neighborhood in the Bronx. Despite their differences, the two men soon develop an unexpected bond while confronting racism and danger in an era of segregation. This was a delightful movie to sit through. Do I recommend needing to sit through it more than once? 100% no. This is a one-time watch, but it is definitely a decent one-time watch. There is a lot of character play between, sort of like, you know, the opposites attract sort of idea, where you got people from two completely different classes of life and two completely different personalities that spend time together and learn to basically entrust each other and make a friendship by the time the end of the tour hits. Now that's not a spoiler by any means. I'm sure anyone could have figured that out from the synopsis that I read. It is a decent flick, and I'll be honest with you, 100%, I had no idea what The Green Book was in terms of, you know, not even just the movie name, but The Green Book itself. And it's basically a book that back in the 1960s that basically outlaid where African-American people of color were welcome to stay in certain parts of the country versus not welcome to stay in certain parts of the country, i.e. segregation, as the synopsis had outlaid. It's very sad that this was a part of history, but it is undeniable that this was a part of history. And as much as it's unpleasant to think about how people were treated at that time of the African-American race, it is undeniably pure history that happened, and it can't be forgotten. If anything, it is a good reminder of how they were treated, and where we have progressed even as of today. Now, granted, racism is not gone today by any means of the stretch. But it is definitely improved. And this is a good way to sort of remind people, this is the way it was, And now look at where we are today. It's definitely advanced quite a bit. And this is a good visual of how people were treated back then. Doesn't matter what kind of class. Like I said, this guy was like had a doctorate of some sort. He was very, very well spoken, very upper class, but that didn't matter. The color of his skin very much showed that it didn't matter where he went. He was treated like any other person that they looked at on the sidewalk that was African American. It didn't matter. There was no class back then. It was black and white, and that was it. And some pretty horrible treatment, I gotta admit. There's some cases of looking at this as a patron of the movie, thinking to yourself, well, man, that's pretty awful that these people are treated that way. But like I said, it's unfortunate that it is history that needs. People need to be reminded of so that we don't forget about how it was so that we don't go back to that in the future. Alrighty, next up is Aquaman. Once home to the most advanced civilization on Earth, the city of Atlantis is now an underwater kingdom ruled by the power-hungry King Orm. With a vast army at his disposal, Orm plans to conquer the remaining oceanic people and then the surface world. Standing in his way is Aquaman, Orm's half-human, half-Atlantean brother, and true heir to the throne. With the help from Royal Counselor Vulko, hopefully I pronounced that right, Aquaman must retrieve the legendary Trident of Atlantean and embrace his destiny as protector of the deep. Honestly, not bad. There's always been a long-standing stigma of Aquaman sucks, that, you know, that joke, you know, little Aquaman, you know, kind of the forgotten hero, if you will, at least way more forgotten than a lot of the superhero universe. This was okay. Judging by what they had to do for this, it was obviously like 90, at least 85 to 90% CG, like the entire environment. Normally that bugs me, but it made sense in this considering the way that it was done. Like, we're talking about Atlantis under the ocean. There was no way that they were going to do this practically. Or at least there's no way of them doing this practically and looking half decent. Very, very heavy on the CGI. If you're prepared for that, honestly, not a terrible flick. Did I love it? No. Did I hate it? No, not at all. This was, again, for me, I will never, ever have to sit through this again. It doesn't matter if I am given a 4K Blu-ray of it, I will probably never sit through it again. It could be free broadcast on television. Honestly, it doesn't matter if it's a lazy Sunday afternoon, and that's the case. I would rather just take a nap or watch something else or do something else than have to sit through this again. But it was a decent one-time sit. And this is coming from someone, like I mentioned earlier, that isn't into the superhero flicks by much major of an interest. This was okay. It really was. It probably helped that my wife and I went into this with very little expectation, but it killed a Saturday evening. We enjoyed our dinner with it. You know, obviously, we ate our dinner and then continued the movie afterwards. It was okay. It really was. If you're really, really big into the superhero flicks, you might get a little bit more appreciation out of this one. If you know the Aquaman lore, you'll probably get a bit more appreciation out of this one. I don't know how tightly it follows the original lore. I can't speak to that, not knowing. But Aquaman, you know what? It gets a solid pass for people to at least rent it and enjoy it for an evening with their family. Alrighty, last up for what we watched this month is Action Point. DC is the crackpot owner of Action Point, a low-rent, out-of-control amusement park where the rides are designed with minimum safety for maximum fun. A corporate megapark opens nearby and jeopardizes the future of Action Point. To save his beloved park, his lonely crew of misfits must risk everything to pull out all the stops and save the day. Yeah, I knew exactly what I was getting going into this before even watching it. I knew that this was going to be a D-list movie with, for the most part, D-list actors that a few of them you've heard of, More than likely. Most of them you haven't. It's like very minimal screen time that they've either had in general at all, or they might have played very minor supporting roles in the past. I honestly didn't look up any of them on IMDb because I really didn't care to. But the notable names in this are Johnny Knoxville and Chris Pontius. You would know them from the Jackass series of films and TV show. Yeah, I knew exactly what I was getting with this. It was going to be a very low-budget-ish, at least, like I said, I didn't look up the IMDb. Maybe they put a ton of money into this. It definitely didn't look like they did. I don't imagine that it was a massive adventure in terms of budget for this film. But it was okay. Having grown up with the Jackass crew, the wife and I were like, you know what, we'll kill an evening with this. We knew what we were getting into. 100% D-list movie. You want to watch something that you want basically pass the time for an evening for something that you haven't watched. You can get to the end of it. It's not unwatchable. Can I recommend watching this? Honestly, no. Unless you are familiar with the Jackass crew, i.e. at least two of them, because that's the only two that I could recognize in this. I can't recommend it. It is very, very D-list. With the exception, like I said, if you're very hard up for something new to watch and you're a Johnny Knoxville fan, sure, that is about it. There is a couple of cheap laughs. I can't recommend this movie, though, past that. Like I said, unless you really want to see Johnny Knoxville in another movie that you haven't watched, I can't recommend it. That is Action Point. It is very, very low grade, very budgety. That's not to say low budget films are bad. I've seen some good ones. This one, unfortunately, does not fall in that category. It is just going to be shovelware that you find in the discount DVD and Blu-ray bins. That is where I see this movie going to be found in the future. Alrighty, I am going to wrap this up with a delightful children's story. So those of you that have youngins, you know what? You can bring them into the room, have them sit around the phone or laptop, whatever you might be listening to the show on. Get them a nice little juice box and a blanket. They can curl up on the carpet and enjoy a lovely, delightful children's story. Like I said, you can give this a pause now, play it after, and there you go. Anyways, I'm going to get right on into the story. Brenda's beaver needs a barber. Brenda has a beaver, and she's ready to confess. As soft and sweet as it may be, her beaver is a mess. Brenda's beaver's big. Brenda's beaver's hairy. Every guy who's seen it says that Brenda's beaver's scary. Brenda took her beaver for a swim down at the lake. By the looks that she received, she figured that was a mistake. She stuffed that furry mound into a swimming suit. It stuck out all around. It was anything but cute. Some who saw it laughed. Others were just stunned. Brenda's beaver was hanging out, soaking up the sun. Her friends could not believe her. They said, "We need to talk." They covered up her beaver, and they took her for a walk. "Brenda, dear, listen here. We want to help you out. Your beaver needs a makeover. It really needs it now." "I hope we don't seem pushy," said her biker friend named Kim. "Your beaver is too bushy. We just think it needs a trim." Savannah pulled her beaver back to show off what she had done. Hers has a nice long landing patch. It looks like it'd be fun. Chrissy's beaver is quite rare. It could be worth a million. Hers is bare. It has no hair. Her beaver is a Brazilian. Catherine let her beaver loose. She said, "There's nothing to it. Grab some clippers and a can of mousse. We'll show you how to do it." Kim produced some scissors, and Chrissy had some wax. Now all that Brenda had to do was sit back and relax. As they came towards her beaver, they said, "Now don't be scared. We're going to see what's underneath that frumpy pile of hair." It ended in just minutes. They didn't leave her much. When Brenda's friends were finished, she and her beaver blushed. Her beaver was so tiny, they could not believe their eyes. It was smooth and it was shiny. It was hard to recognize. Now Brenda is so proud, it seems like every time we see her, she's in the center of a crowd, just showing off her beaver. And there you go. That is Brenda's Beaver Needs a Barber. I will put a link to that as well in the podcast description if you wish to buy this delightful piece of literature for your children to read again and again in the future. Anyways, that is the show for this month. I will catch you next time. Thanks for listening. Have a good one. Peace out.